This episode of GameScoop is sponsored by Squarespace. If you're looking for a way to make your business stand out and succeed online, Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for you. They take the stress out of creating an awesome website, engaging with your audience, and selling anything from products to content to time, so you're able to focus on, you know, everything else. In other words, you'll have more time for gaming. With the new guided design system, you can choose from curated layouts and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, optimized for every device. And with Squarespace's integrated, optimized SEO tools, you'll show up more often to more people. Squarespace doesn't just make things easier for you. Checkout for your customers is made seamless with simple but powerful payment tools that allow you to accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. So whether you're just starting out or looking to expand your existing brand, be sure to visit squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/gamescoop to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/gamescoop for 10% off. You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get. Except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN GameScoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield, and joining me this week is Tina Amini.
Me and my cat.
What's your cat's name?
Lion.
And Lion is joining us. Justin Davis. And Sam Claiborne.
Hey, everybody.
And we've got a great show for you this week. We're going to talk about some important new release dates. We're going to talk about some a couple really cool games that are out this week. But first, Assassin's Creed Valhalla is finally officially announced. The long rumored Viking entry in the Assassin's Creed series. Hopefully everyone got a chance to watch the cinematic trailer. Any sort of first impressions on what we've seen so far?
I feel bad for the English.
Yeah.
I don't think you're supposed to sympathize with them there.
They're getting slaughtered by very, very mean Vikings.
Okay, so there were two scenes in that cinematic trailer that I really liked that reminded me of scenes of other movies and such. Mm. One was when the main protagonist's friend, his buddy, gets like impaled twice, but he's still beating down the enemy force. And it felt very much like the Boromir scene in Fellowship of the Ring, if you know what I'm talking about. No spoilers.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I guess that is a spoiler inherently. Sorry if you haven't seen that movie. And then the other one...
he could be fine based on what you just said. He could be totally
true.
Fine.
Yeah, I mean, he was fighting until the end.
Just two arrows.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then there's the you guys have seen Gladiator.
Yeah. Yes.
The emperor when he's like just his whole demeanor, the sort of like petulant king demeanor that also was very reminiscent. Anyway, Watch I like Phoenix.
I think they spent a lot of time like doing the cool thing where they made a game that I want to play that's about Vikings. And then like they're like, but also it's an Assassin's Creed game. And they would start slipping that stuff in, like the bird, and then of course the stabby wrist. It was really cool how they did that. And I would totally play that game if it was just about Vikings.
That's a point. That's the point I wanted to make. Like, I wonder, is it time for these games to move away from Assassin's Creed?
Yeah, no more future.
Like, or just like they just it doesn't
I don't
need
want
to
walk
be,
around an office.
It doesn't need to be an Assassin's Creed game. Like, it can be an open world action RPG Viking game. You know, it's like it's almost like when they started with AC Origins and Odyssey, they could have started a new franchise with those games because the games are great. I'm sure this game's going to be amazing. But like this Viking is an assassin. He's part of this historic, this Assassin's Guild, and he's got the hidden blades. Like, come on, man.
But look, that hidden blade saved his life. So maybe the Assassin's Creed life is the way.
It's just like it gets less and less believable.
It doesn't in these new settings. Like I really love the new style of Assassin's Creed. you know, Origins I wasn't as taken with, but Odyssey is one of my favorite games of this generation. So, you know, for me, it's like, great, like, bring it on, another big open world action RPG. But I have seen an undercurrent of like people that miss the old style of Assassin's Creed.
Yeah.
Why did I kind of heard that take too, is like, oh, this is looks like it's more like the old Assassin's Creed. And then I read our articles about it and I still don't really get that. It still seems like RPG Assassin's Creed.
Oh, no, no, it is. I'm saying people miss that. Like, people, that's something seeing about Valhalla. They're like, this looks cool, but we miss the old thing.
Mm-hmm. I think it's funny because I guess you can take the interpretation of what makes an Assassin's Creed series a little differently. Like, they're obviously incorporating some new elements and some older elements that were new to the series at the time, like naval combat is making a return. But that was an element that, like, people appreciated about the series as it was evolving. So the future stuff, it is very much a part of the series, but it wasn't one that I necessarily loved or looked to the series for. So if that is what makes Assassin's Creed an Assassin's Creed series, like, I don't know that that's the thing that we should be valuing over something like the elements of exploration, the elements of like overtaking certain areas and kind of like embedding yourself in this open world game that's really got a heavy RPG element to it too. That feels more Assassin's Creed to me.
Yeah. Yeah. I know that there's a contingent of fans that actually do like the story in the modern day trappings and they like following all that. But the developers have even made it so like if you don't care about that, you hardly even notice it when you play these recent games.
It's right? Fallen like, off since 3. 3 was like the height of it. Yeah. People were searching Desmond all the time when we were writing that guide and like really talking about it and stuff. And then like it really trailed off.
Yeah.
You play, like in Odyssey in particular, like you play that game for like 20 hours and then it pulls you back into the modern day. I'm like, oh, forgot all about this.
Yeah. It's like these brief interruptions, little intermissions.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. We had an interview with the, you know, I think it's the director. I apologize, but a member of the development staff. And they really, really are playing up in this game that you're going to build a settlement and you're going to build new buildings in your settlement. And those buildings are going to unlock new characters that he really went out of his way to emphasize that they're not going to be afterthoughts. You're really going to care about them and they're going to be interesting. And each thing that you add onto your settlement is going to add new gameplay. And like, that's my complete video game guilty pleasure. It's my favorite thing to do in any game is like build up a home and a base in a game where it's not actually like a base building game. Like that's the reason I love Dragon Age Inquisition so much.
Best part of the whole settlement aspect is that you can actually construct certain specific buildings in your settlement. And then that obviously expands the range of resources that are available to you, activities that are available to you. But I'm just like, so it's like a tower defense Assassin's Creed game. I'm all for it.
I love that's such a sucker for just for me personally, any game that has that, I'm in.
What didn't Assassin's Creed 2 have like a base building? Like you had like a estate that you built up?
Not too well. Yeah, they've dabbled with it a little. It was the one after that. Brotherhood was the one. Maybe it was too. The one where you had the big villa, and then you built it up over time. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you guys see the perhaps? I don't even know. What do you call bullshots when you don't know if they're real or not? I guess they're.
Oh, I thought the screenshots are absolute bullshots.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's call them maybe shots for now. But they maybe screenshots. But they look amazing, and those are like you know because a cinematic trailer. You know, if you don't know, is like just CG that somebody made that's supposed to hype you for the game. And Assassin's Creed is famous for those. Those are bold trailers, right? They're nothing to do with the game. They're just supposed to give you the vibe of the game, if anything. Thing, but mainly just make you excited. So they released a handful of screenshots, and one of them is the coolest thing I've ever seen. It's this like wood Norwegian palace with like the northern lights behind it and like, you know, this like path like up rock to it. It looks like the coolest scene in The Witcher ever or something. Like it's just like total fantasy looking. I love it.
I'm gonna try to bring it up here.
Which Whoa, you don't have that technology.
Oh, I think, okay. All right, let's see if I can make this work here. I'm gonna try to share my screen. Is it?
And I was trying to peek around those. Yeah.
Is that the image you're talking about? Yeah. This is the screen that I thought looked most like a screenshot, and it has a very like stylized look to it. I hope the game looks like this.
Mm-hmm. They look like paintings, and either the game is actually not straight realistic, and through filter or other artistic means, they actually are making it a little more painterly, or those screenshots are just fake as hell. Mm-hmm. So we will see.
I mean, in some of the others, like the camera's not even like behind your character. So it's like, there's no way that can be a screenshot.
Like there's also that one Red Dead 2 trailer where they were saying like like a lot of the fan community was pushing back and saying that they wanted gameplay, and then Rockstar came out and said, actually, all of that is gameplay. We just played with the camera and pulled it up in certain respects because people were using the camera angle as a sort of defense that it wasn't gameplay. So they could have just tweaked with stuff. Dev tools.
Yeah, that's true. I
know that like there's going to be naval combat, which people like, but again, like without cannons, I don't think that's really that exciting for me. But what?
In Odyssey, they had like flaming spears.
I know. Yeah. I just didn't think, I don't know, the cannons, man. You gotta have cannons, broadsides. It's fun. But I can picture what it's going to be. And I was wondering like if it has like, you know, Northern England and Ireland and stuff, and then that's the places you attack. But then it'll probably have Sweden and Norway. And then I bet it'll have Iceland as like a place that'll look just like Death Stranding, which will be pretty funny to have. But I wonder if it'll have the Americas on the other side, which I think would be really cool.
That's a rumor.
Is it?
Well, that you may like, you know, for one or two missions, may like a lot of Assassin's Creeds have like it'll pop you into somewhere else for like, you know, a section of the game and then let you return. It's not like a core focus.
Mm. Yeah, I think that'd be really neat. Mm-hmm.
15 studios are working on this game.
That's insane.
How else are you going to get
a lot of studios? Yeah. I mean, Ubisoft is known for borrowing from their other studios to support, but that still seems unprecedented.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought so too. And then Ubisoft Montreal, I believe, is the lead studio working on it. I also thought it was interesting that this trailer is bookended with Xbox Series X branding.
Yeah. Seems like a next-gen game.
Yeah. I mean, it's like they've aligned with Microsoft for like marketing purposes. Yeah. And it's entirely possible there could be some sort of exclusive items in the Xbox version of the game. But I think this is the first time we've seen a third-party game sort of, you know, align itself with either Sony or Microsoft.
That's the trickiest marketing. It's like naming a ballpark after a bank. It's like it's so silly. It's like you get through the whole trailer, you know it's on every system, and then it just says Xbox at the end. It doesn't say anything about like exclusive stuff on the Xbox. It doesn't say anything about like this looks better on Xbox. They just kind of limply trot out the Xbox logo. I think that's so silly.
That's
it probably costs so much money.
I know. Yeah, that's why I think it's interesting.
It's called synergy, Sam.
It's total synergy.
It's kind of, I think it's like another example of Sony kind of letting Microsoft dominate the next gen conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, they've been more prepared to come out outright with this stuff. And we just learned that there's going to be an Inside Xbox next week too. So they're just like, you know, one after the other knocking them out of the park.
Yeah, for sure. And then finally, it's been given a holiday 2020 release window. Do you think, does that make you think it'll be a launch game for next-gen consoles?
Ooh, good question.
Because the holiday to me means after October, November or December.
Yeah.
So when was Watch Dogs 3 delayed to?
It's like before their fiscal year, whatever. So it could be any time before next March, I believe, or April.
So they have to keep those two games away from each other is what I think in Ubisoft's head. So then it's sort of like, you know, I don't know. Like, is Watch Dogs going to be early, like the kickoff of Q4, and then like maybe Assassin's Creed to follow in November? Like, I don't know.
I think it's like if they have the opportunity to say like, do we want this to be a launch game or not, like they're definitely going to say like, yeah, we want this to be a launch game, right? I mean, isn't that like you get see those pictures of people with their like first system and they're like, and I got these six games, you know, like it's like that's like such an exciting thing to be a part of.
They're not usually
at launch though. That is interesting. I remember like Assassin's Creed 3's like remake was at launch for Wii U, and I think it helped it a lot. Like that's like a really funny thing to think that Wii U pushed anything. But you know, Assassin's Creed 3 got reissued for it right then.
Black Flag was cross gen, like this game is. And you know, that was my first, like that was the game I played on my launch PS4, even though it was also available on last gen. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that seems similar-ish to me. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, one wrinkle there is like the Xbox version actually is buy once and play anywhere, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, maybe you could start on your Xbox One and then move to your Series X if, you know, it came out, you know, whatever, a week later, you know, whatever it might be.
I think it's really funny that Damon, I've heard you say this several times in meetings and stuff, that you're like, the holiday season. You're like, well, that means it can't be a launch game. Because to you, Damon, the holiday season clearly starts, maybe, what is it, after Thanksgiving?
Yeah, Thanksgiving, like Thanksgiving.
So Thanksgiving's not a holiday for you?
No, it is.
No, he's saying Thanksgiving.
Yeah. What about Halloween?
That is a holiday.
Okay.
But it's not the holidays. Just like the 4th of July is a holiday. Independence Day is a holiday, but it's not part of the holidays.
Mm. Okay. So, okay. All right. So
do we have to have the day off for it to be a holiday? Because then Halloween is a holiday. Mm-hmm. We don't get Halloween off.
We should be.
We should get Halloween off.
You know, I mean, summer movies are coming out in April. The whole thing's made up.
Yeah, yeah.
Time doesn't matter anymore right now.
No, it certainly doesn't. That's a good point. Although, man, our Halloween episode is going to be really strange.
Yeah.
We can still pull off co-op mages.
Yeah?
Yeah.
This year. Yeah. I want to do co-op mages this year.
Big bushy wizard beard.
Yeah. We'll just order everything now so that it comes in time from Amazon. Exactly.
Seriously. Yeah. Seriously.
Non-essential purchases.
I have a really cute mage outfit in Animal Crossing.
Yeah, me too. I got a mage's hat, and I get people call it a witch's hat, and I correct them every time.
Dear sir, I must correct you. It's a mage's hat.
Yeah, well, that's exactly how it goes.
All right, let's move on. We've got new release dates for both The Last of Us Part 2 and Ghost of Tsushima. Turns out The Last of Us Part 2's indefinite delay was about 2.5 weeks. Now arrives on June 19th. Yeah. So maybe for such a short delay, calling it delayed indefinitely was maybe a little dramatic.
Premature,
dramatic for sure.
That game also, like earlier this year, it had its release date announced and then delayed like a week later. why?
I mean, to be fair, I assume there's a level of people anticipating or projecting like how much this work from home scenario is going to be impacting them. And it ends up being a bit of an overcorrection where people have to kind of dial it back and recognize that. But I do want to have been a fly on the wall in those meetings and understand the context of like, there's no way this thing is going to be ready considering where the game is at, or maybe like where people are at in their work from home setup, or where certain marketing beats are at, or where budgets are at. Like, what was the issue that made them think it should be an indefinite delay? That clearly was an overprojection.
Or what about this? They could have delayed it until the new ghost date, just arbitrarily, right? Like they would have had a couple extra weeks to work on it. But instead, they're like, bam, we're taking over this slot.
It is interesting. The new ghost date is July 17th, in case you hadn't heard. And it is interesting that game, which presumably could have arrived on time, just has to get out of the way of The Last of Us Part 2.
But maybe we didn't hear about their indefinite delay. I mean,
yeah, maybe.
Maybe they actually coordinated. Oh gosh, I didn't even want to think about that.
One other possibility, and we talked about it on GameScoop at the time, was that that's a game that is about a pandemic sweeping the globe, and that the delay may have been like maybe we don't want to be launching this game right now, and then enough time passed that they're like, nah.
Yeah, it seems fine actually.
Yeah, it seems fine actually. I think there's a non-small chance that like it's actually not to do with his development as much as like just the
obvious sentiment. Yeah.
So I'm going to do the segment called Say Something Nice About This Topic, which is one of my favorite things to do. We're getting two amazing games, hopefully. Amazing. Yeah. Summer. The games we're anticipating a lot. And we never get summer games.
Just a
and
month
this summer's
apart,
gonna
too.
Suck. So it's so good.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I'm really excited for that.
Having announcements like Assassin's Creed today and then games to look forward to and talk about, like it's exciting to have lots of things to talk about.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Sure. So with Last of Us Part 2 coming on June 19th, I think the real question is a week going to be enough time for everyone to finish it before Mr. Driller Drillland is out?
Well, isn't that a Switch game?
Yeah.
You can play them at the same time.
That's true. Those are the rules.
Uh-huh. Second screen experience.
Yeah, well, you've got to give up Animal Crossing then.
Nope.
Yeah, well, maybe if you have a Switch Lite.
Animal Crossing.
There you go. Those are the new rules.
Yeah, we just prop everything in front of us now.
Mm-hmm.
All the screens.
Sam said it best a couple weeks ago where Animal Crossing is just email. It doesn't count as a video game.
It's just email?
You wake up and you check it.
Yeah, you literally check your email every day or your mail every day.
Yeah. It's true. I've been trying to do a little bit of Animal Crossing. I know we're going to talk about what you've been playing, but like during the load times in Final Fantasy, which aren't that bad. So now I'm kind of looking forward to the last couple months of load times. I'm like, well, if I had a few more load times, I'd be able to mine more iron.
I read one of my guilty pleasures is I like to read the relationship advice subreddit where people are just asking for advice and then people weigh in on like what
you
they
can just
do.
Ask here.
Yeah,
we could. We the games group. Damon may have some experience with that.
That's true.
this.
Damon hosted a podcast about that, just so I want to explain Justin's joke. So it wasn't anything like unclear about that.
Yeah.
So briefly ran a video series for advice, and it frequently was relationship related.
That's right. That's right.
You got two experts here.
Two experts. Sorry.
All right, let's bring it back.
No, it's fine. Like, so there's the thing that I like most about it is like it's the most minor, like my girlfriend forgot to do this or my boyfriend did this insensitive thing. And all the comments, so I say dump them.
It's every time.
But like the thing that
I'm sure they say lawyer up.
Yeah.
does the first dump them get all the votes?
Lawyer.
Yeah. And this
lawyer up gets all the votes.
They got in an argument, and then she, you know, took a shower to cool off. And when she came out of the shower, he was on her Switch, and it had messed up her whole island. Had picked all her flowers, and like chopped down all her trees, and like terraformed everything. I don't know,
Tina. Go ahead.
I can't believe it. Like, so on the one hand, it's just a video game, but on the other hand, like the level of sociopathy to like go out of your way to open someone's game and like
I cut down all your trees.
Their digital space was unbelievable to me.
Unless they're 12, in which case it just makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. That's how you get your anger out.
Yeah.
Do you think I'm okay to tell the story about the Animal Crossing preview that we went to?
Yeah, why not? Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
What about it?
Well, so...
you may have already told this story, but...
Oh, was it about how they wouldn't let me mess up the town?
You mentioned that at our PAX panel, which we published him, yeah.
Okay. Because it was the same idea where this person was like, you know, like you're playing this town, this demo in my town. And I thought you could report animals and get them kicked out, which is not the case. That's not how you get animals kicked out of your town, although you can get them kicked out. And so I was going up and talking to them, and I was like going through the dialogue. And they're like, please stop. Please stop it. Please stop saying, no, please back out of that. Please stop.
Yeah. Because the Nintendo employee who was giving the demo, you were playing her save file.
That's why. Was the story we got. But that might have been a kind of a flourish a creative way to explain, like, don't do things that are not, you know, that aren't under embargo or something like that. I have no idea.
I don't know. I mean, do you think maybe they time traveled and they wanted to hide that fact and so just pretended like it was these long.
The reason I'm saying that
well-kept island.
The reason I'm mainly saying that is it was on three different Switches.
Yeah,
that's a fair point.
We jumped from one week in one 3 weeks in, and then a month in. By them like unplugging and plugging in something like behind a little curtain. So I couldn't see what's going on. I was like, what are you guys doing back there? They're like, oh, there's three Switches.
Okay. Let's move on, but we're going to stick with the Switch. I thought this was super cool this week. A Neo Geo Pocket Color game was released on Switch this week.
Explain what the Neo Geo Pocket Color is, Damon.
It was a short-lived handheld made by SNK, the Neo Geo company. And I think it was like in the late 90s, early 2000s.
It looks like the Game Gear.
The Neo Geo Pocket was black and white like the Game Boy.
Oh, wait. Yeah, sorry. The Pocket was black and white.
And then they made a color version.
My favorite thing about the Neo Geo Pocket Color is they released a Neo Geo Pocket, which was black and white. And then very, very soon after, released the Pocket
Color. It was like the same year, I think.
Yeah. That's like the pro model, or that's like the models we get today. Can you imagine if you got an Xbox One Series or Xbox Series X, and then one was black and white?
Yeah,
it's cheaper. Cheaper to do that. If you want the black and white one, it's available.
It's like very slightly less powerful than a GBA, or like in between a Game Boy Color and a GBA, I would say.
Yeah. So did you hear about this game on Switch?
Mm-hmm. No. The gal fighting game.
It's called Gals Fighters. Oh,
Gals Fighters. Yeah.
And then the game when it's presented on the Switch, it's framed by the Neo Geo Pocket Color on screen, so it kind of looks like you're holding that. I think it's awesome. I've actually never played this game, but I read up on it, and people say it's a really like really fun, solid fighting game. And I just hope this is like the start of a new trend of obscure Neo Geo Pocket Color games getting
released. Is that an SNK game?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's like SNK. Female SNK fighters from various games, like what? Fighting History?
Is that in the collection?
Samurai Showdown? No. There's nothing.
That was Neo Geo?
There's no Neo Geo games in the SNK. Well, I don't want to say that for sure. But there's certainly no Neo Geo Pocket games in the SNK 40th anniversary collection.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Is it River City Ransom-esque? I know you just said it was fighting game characters, or is it a fighter?
It's a fighter, like one-on-one.
Okay.
Fighting game. That's super cool. Cute. Let's talk about what we've been playing. I'm still slowly making my way through Final Fantasy VII Remake. Did anyone else finish?
No.
No one's finished. Okay.
I finished a boss battle.
Cool.
But I've been putting off forever.
I just got through a haunted train station.
Yeah.
I'm just getting through there now.
We're all in the same spot. We're all playing through it fairly slowly. There are a lot of comments last week that, hey, finish the game and then come back and your opinion of it will change. And I'll have you know that since I don't give a crap about the lore story of that game, I'm fully spoiled on the ending. Like,
gotcha.
I completely read up and understand everything that's like happening because, you know, it's just not important to me. But, you know, because people are playing through it, I'm clearly not going to spoil anything for that.
But we reported on, like, didn't Nomura say, like, something about how this will, that he didn't change the story?
There was a story today that he's not completely changing the story moving forward.
Okay. Okay. So in this game, maybe.
Yeah.
For disc two.
Yeah. For disc two. And five and six and seven. This is gonna be in the end of this game, the way this is going, it's gonna be maybe a 450-hour game.
The way we're playing it.
Yeah.
Especially the way we're playing it. And I actually know somebody who platinumed it already, which seems like unfathomable to me. I mean, I can't even believe that. But I love the pace I'm playing with. I still look forward to playing it every night. I have no problem with that. I put in a couple hours. Like, it's going great. Like, I like the play sessions I have. Where are you, Damon?
Like I said, still moving slowly. I think I'm in chapter six.
That's not that slow. What did you just fight?
A lot of... I went through the thing where you infiltrate. You have to like sneak into the base, and you fight. Have the fight with the motorcycle guy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You have a couple fights with him, and then
you had the pizza party.
I'm a little bit. Yeah, I'm past that part.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool.
Damon's still pretty early on because he's still in Midgar.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, that's very funny.
Thank you. I've been playing a lot of man, I already know the comments are going to be mean because I get accused of not liking AAA games, even though I play and like almost all of them. But I've been playing a lot of like casual PC games. Like it popped into my head one day that like I was like, oh yeah, I remember Diner Dash. Mm-hmm. So I've been looking up and playing a bunch of games like that. Like
I remember playing the Xbox Live arcade version of Diner Dash.
They're totally good, and they're totally more hardcore than people think they are. Like, getting the gold medal time or the three-star time or whatever you want to call it, like, it takes a lot of, like, multitasking skill, and, like, these sorts of chill-out games are what's appealing to me at this moment. So, like, I'm splitting my time between games like 12 Labors of Hercules and Hero of the Kingdom and stuff like that when I'm not playing Final Fantasy. Mm. And I think that they are underrated and get a bad rap.
What about Picross S4?
Well, hold on. Before we go on, that Diner Dash game, every time you say that, I think of this very expensive, rare NES game called Panic Restaurant, which is such a good name.
That is a really good name.
It's yeah.
Like a bad translation of Diner Dash.
Yeah, exactly. I always think of like, oh, is that the English version of... No, the English version is just Panic Restaurant. The Japanese name is Wanpaku Kokun no Gourmet World.
Ooh.
Mm. Oh my goodness, yes. Box art.
Isn't that great? Do you want to throw it up on Still Store?
Yep. Here we go.
it's got a big scary face. I wish you would have asked me to explain this one from memory. Because I can't even explain it looking right at it. There's a decapitated chef.
Oh my goodness.
I mean, he is panicking.
He's it's total chaos.
Yeah.
There's a chicken that's running away. There's a giant carrot that's peering behind the curtains.
A sexy
in a
carrot.
Concerned fashion. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's a very, very crazy hot dog in the upper left.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
There's a lot of panic going on in this box art.
And then there's just a jello mold on the ground there because
for no reason.
The jello mold has legs.
Yeah. Of course it does.
Right.
Okay. All right.
That might be a hint of the gameplay.
It reminds me of like a parallel universe. Like, you know, we've all laughed and made fun of the weird, bizarre, like Mega Man and Pac-Man boxes there are. Yeah, like there's a parallel universe where like we're on Panic Restaurant 15 right now. And then Pac-Man is the game that's like been lost to the sands of time.
I've also been playing Streets of Rage 4.
Yeah,
it's awesome.
It?
It's awesome. I love it.
Really?
It's like, yeah, right. It's so fun. It's such a cool homage. You can tell that the developers are big fans of the series. I haven't played just a straight brawler in so long that it feels mm-hmm. really refreshing, even though it's not really doing anything new gameplay-wise, but it has a really cool, a more modern like hand-drawn art style that I love. The animation's great. It's just super fun.
I remember our reviewer said that like it didn't make that like, you know, stretch as like a next-gen brawler, and it really relies on being an old-school brawler. But two things about that. One is that Castle Crashers made that stretch, and it's like the only brawler I've liked in a long time, besides maybe the Warriors, the Rockstar game. I like it when people are stretching the brawler genre. I think it's really cool, but it's fine. I should check this one out. But the other thing is that we put up a guide for this where there's these like really secret unlockable levels, and it was so cool. Like I edited that guide, and I was like really interested in that. And I thought that was like there seems to be a lot of cool secret stuff in the game. I thought that was like a good thing to put in there.
Yeah, you can unlock more characters. You can unlock retro pixel art characters. I really like, there's a point system, and the points matter because that's how you get extra lives. Cool. Like while you're playing through level, it'll say like, you'll say like 2,000 more points to go for an extra life. So that incentivizes you to try and rack up combos, and you can find bags of money and like, you know, trash cans and stuff that will lift your score. So that's really cool. And then your accumulated points across the whole game that you've played, that's how you unlock these new characters and levels. Cool.
It's awesome. I like it when you play through a game and at the end of the game, it unlocks a point scoring mode. Resident Evil 3 kind of does that. But Halo 3, I remember, had a really cool arcade mode like that where you could accrue points and stuff like that. I thought that was really clever.
Go ahead.
I want points to come back in video games. And it's funny, there's an era, like Mario 3 is the example that's popping into my mind, where the points don't do anything. Like they just don't, they serve no purpose, but like games had to have them. It was just a thing in video games.
Yeah.
And so you just accumulated them for nothing before they finally decided to just cut it. Like, I want Assassin's Creed Valhalla to just, I just want you to score points. People. And it's just there.
I wouldn't mind being able to spin them too.
Yeah.
Well, it's like rankings after a shooter match or like, you know, S rankings for combat, that kind of thing. Still sort of exists.
Yeah. It does. And there's leaderboards for legitimate games with point score, right? Like, that still exists. But the funny thing that Justin brings up is that in Mario, if you just played Mario every day for the rest of your life, you would have the highest score in Mario on Earth because it you just play through the game again. It just loops with the same score. It's crazy. I think that's so funny. So the only purpose of that score, maybe only Mario 1 does that, actually. I don't know if 3 does. I'll look into that. But the best thing about scores in those games is that you could ride into Nintendo Power and you could get on the high score charts because that's what leaderboards were then. They're in the magazine, in print, and it was like, so-and-so in Kentucky has the highest score in Tetris. It's pretty cool.
A couple things about Streets of Rage 4. When you pick up food off the ground, it makes the same sound as Pac-Man when Pac-Man eats fruit. It's like
Oh, yeah.
It's really, really good. And then the second level is in a police station because you get arrested, presumably. And then there's a prison break. And you have to not only do you beat up all the prisoners, you also have to beat up all the policemen. And then one of the like mid bosses is named Murphy. And I'm going to assume that's a RoboCop reference because RoboCop is Agent Murphy.
Okay. Well, it's not called Streets of Calm.
That's right. That is absolutely right. Anyone else?
I got a full on laugh out loud from Gina there.
Anyone
Calm
else
restaurant.
Playing anything else?
Restaurant, exactly.
Sam, I have watched 3/4 of the Beastie Boys documentary.
Oh, nice. Yeah. I was going to offer to do a watch party with you for that. I'm watching Babylon Berlin, and I finished the newest season of it, and it is so good.
Okay, good. I've only watched the first 2 episodes, and it's a little bit like, what? So
I know, it's hard to catch up.
Am I still supposed to care about the train? Does the train still matter?
Yeah, the Nazi train. You'll catch up right away. And then there's a I always sell the series. It's the most expensive series ever made in Germany, or the most expensive entertainment thing. It looks amazing. It's like Star Wars 1930s tech. But in this last season, the first season, there was the best car chase I've ever seen in my entire life with the craziest scene ever.
What? Because the second season car has crash. The best car crash.
That's what I mean. It's the first and second season are combined.
Okay,
On Netflix. So this season has just an absolutely insane one-on-one character chase with, I'm not going to give anything away, but it has a wall of spikes scene, which is very video game.
Like Indiana Jones?
I won't go into too much detail, but watch for that. It is crazy. It's crazy.
Cool.
Just one of the coolest things committed to film. I just can't wait for you to see it.
Babylon Berlin is awesome. Mm-hmm. Let's check in with the listeners.
Hi. Hey,
listeners, remember you can always reach us at the email address gamescoop@ign.com, just like Nathan did. Nathan says, I'm a longtime viewer, big fan of the show. I grew up playing the NES and SNES the most, and I still can remember the tunes in games like Super Mario Brothers, Legend of Zelda, Mega Man, Ninja Gaiden, etc. But with modern games, I couldn't tell you a song from something that I played last week. Do you think something was lost when consoles changed from chiptunes to orchestral soundtracks? I've noticed a similar thing that's happened with movies, where they mostly have stopped creating theme songs, and I find myself missing tracks like Danny Elfman's Batman theme and John Williams' Indiana Jones theme, for example. What are your thoughts about this?
Well, they still do theme songs for TV shows.
Yeah, like Game of Thrones is a very recognizable theme song, yeah, right?
Exactly. I think he's attributing the reason he can't remember modern music to the wrong thing. I think it has more to do with the fact that those old games had 45 seconds of music that you listen to for 100 hours over the course of years and years.
Yeah.
Is that, I wanted to bring that up. Is that driving you guys crazy in Final Fantasy VII? It drives me absolutely crazy.
What does?
They took the music from the PlayStation game and they orchestrated it, but a lot of those songs in the PlayStation game loop about as fast as an NES game. Even though they had a CD to do Redbook audio on, they could make it all fancy. They loop their songs really fast. So like the battle music is all great and everything, but there's some of the stuff like the Wall Market music. It's so annoying. And it sounds like this like weird, like casino zone, Sonic the Hedgehog music. And it loops so fast. And cause I'll pause my game and play Animal Crossing for a little bit. And I'm like, God, this music's driving me crazy.
It's sorry, Tina, go ahead.
I was just going to say each location has a different song. So like some of them are a little bit more repetitive than others. So it depends where you're pausing for a long time. Like I haven't noticed a lot of it, but I don't do the pause play Animal Crossing thing all that often.
Mm-hmm. I would say 20% of the reason I'm playing that game is for the music. So it's
fine. And when it's good, it's good. I don't get me wrong. Like I love the battle music and I love some of the very, when they reorchestrate Aeris theme and there's like all these new instruments on it and it's like really cool and they're playing it throughout a cutscene, that's all great. But it gets locked in these little grooves that like when I was playing the Switch version just months ago, I was annoyed by that too. It was like, it has some low points in music. But then again, I'm an FF6 music guy, so.
It is true that something was lost when consoles changed from what he calls chip tunes to orchestral soundtracks, because it used to be that video game consoles had a sound chip that generated all the music for every single game. So it was like consoles had a house band that played the soundtrack to every game that you played, and it had a very similar sounding quality. So I do miss those days where, you know, every game on the NES sounds about the same, whereas game soundtracks can sound like whatever.
That's one of the earliest conversations I remember having about a video game. My grandfather was like, I have a Commodore 64. I was like, 3 or 4 years old. I was really, really young. And he was, talking about how it has the best sound and like it has the best like sound chip in it and what is different from, the NES or whatever. I remember that conversation really well. And I couldn't really notice at the time, but now I notice when I hear a Commodore game, I can always recognize that it's a Commodore game.
Yeah, for sure.
Because of the tones it generates. And I have another funny fact. Before Atari invented their Pokey sound chip, which is in everything, like games like Pong, they don't have a sound chip, but they make sounds. And those are like totally accidental. It's like a chip making a wave sound that they're just hooking up to a speaker. That's like, it's just going bang, 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 like that. But that's like what an alarm clock kind of generates when you don't, have a computer inside of it. Like that's a very weird way of making sounds. It's really cool.
Yeah.
Weird mechanical sound. Chiptunes, I don't know, like they're really important to me and like such a part of my youth and definitely something I have a lot of nostalgia for. And this is not like a new thing, this has been a decade plus that it's been this way, but like that bleeding over into like more mainstream, like that stuff has been all over the radio for a long time now in like number one hits and like, Lady Gaga and everyone else on earth that's like incorporated this like video game culture into broader pop culture. And like that brings me a lot of joy and pleasure to see that stuff come through in a more like, I don't know, when we were growing up, gaming wasn't what it was today, right? And like it's nice to see that as the young gamers have grown up into adults and creators, that now that influence can be felt across, popular music and other forms of art as well, in my opinion.
There's also just like an inherent kind of like that nostalgia factor colors your perception of it because it's associated with memory. And so that's like deeply associated with emotions too. So it inherently feels so much more impactful, which is a good thing. Like it's nice to recall things on that level and kind of like recite a lot of those memories. But at least the good thing about orchestral soundtracks these days is like it makes for a more immersive setting where people are trying to match storylines and environments and storytelling in general with beats and music. And you can tell like when a big boss battle is coming, or you can tell like when there's something really devastating happening on screen. So like as we get to a level of development where we can expand worlds and make it be this more believable lived in environment, like music is part of that experience too. So there's value to both. And it is good, as Justin said, that it still exists in a modern world in different interpretations and in different media.
Yeah.
I think Nintendo, as I play more Nintendo games with my daughter and she takes more of an interest in video games, they're, and I've talked about this a little on Scoop before, they're the company that's heads and tails the best at like, you know, presenting something new with something old and remixing something new and like playing, you know, I don't know, like Mario Odyssey, as an example of like you go into the wall and then you're 2D 8-bit Mario and the music turns into chiptune Mario, then you pop back out and you're back in 3D. Like, hey, my 5-year-old daughter, that confuses her deeply. Like she doesn't understand what's going on. Like, but that's just for me. Like that's just for dad, right? And like they're a lot more playful with their history in a way that like I wish more video game companies were.
Yeah.
So many recent games have pop music beats. Control has that. Red Dead has that. I'm trying to think if there's one other I just had in my mind that where just like, you know, suddenly a singer, well, Last of Us, I think it has it too. A singer songwriter comes in or a theme song happens or something like that. I think that's like a really cool thing to do. And I haven't liked it too much. Death Stranding did a bunch of pop music. I didn't like it so much in those games, but I was going to say, I love the idea of exposing artists using games. And I think Grand Theft Auto 5 especially, but and then Vice City exposed me to a bunch of music that I would have never heard otherwise because it had stations of bands I liked. And full disclosure, half of my band is in a band in Grand Theft Auto 5, which I love. And so that station is one of my favorite things. And so I thought that was really cool. But really, really think that like it would be on a cool responsibility to take on to be like, oh, I can actually spread, you know, people that are playing video games, maybe I can introduce them to music, not necessarily orchestral, but pop music. I think that's cool.
Yeah. Now, Nathan also says, thanks for taking the time to read this. I have a 20 question suggestion specifically aimed for Sam.
I've been there.
It's going to be a hard mode one. And there's a couple other things I want to get through in this episode. So maybe we could circle around back at the very end, even if it's just Sam that participates in that.
Have we already mentioned the game?
We have not.
Okay, so it's not Panic Restaurant.
That counts as one question.
It is not Panic Restaurant.
Every couple of conversations, I'll ask you a question.
What we're going to do right now is take a look at the 2001 subscriber bonus for Nintendo Power.
What?
Subscriber bonus?
I guess
did you prep us for this?
There's nothing to prep you for.
All right.
You can click on Damon's thing to make him bigger on your screen, by the way. That's what I just did.
That's
probably crashed my computer.
I assume this was something that only subscribers to Nintendo Power can get. Although, then again, that's the only way to get Nintendo Power, isn't it?
Was that Color Advance available?
That's what I was that Game Boy Advance seems fake as hell. And I think it's showing the N64 game Yoshi's Story in the screenshot.
Instead of Yoshi's Island.
That's what we call a bullshot.
Yeah, that is definitely a bullshot.
This was like a big... The whole point of this issue was to get people hyped for the GBA. But I wanted to focus on this segment where the pro picks are supposed to pick underappreciated games for recommendations. So sometimes great games and accessories go almost or just don't get the recognition they deserve until now, that is. So we surveyed 10 Nintendo Power and Nintendo Online staffers to unearth some overlooked gems from Nintendo platforms and present. So members of Nintendo Power and then I guess Nintendo Online was a separate editorial staff, maybe?
N64.com.
Yeah.
Exactly. So Power Pro Drew Williams, he picked Rocket Robot on Wheels, and he says Sucker Punch's excellent title suffered from a glut of high-profile platforms. I didn't know Sucker Punch made that game.
I didn't either. I knew the developer of the Sly stuff.
Yeah, the developer of Ghost of Tsushima. made this N64 game. He also picks Harvest Moon 64, Warlocked, which is a Game Boy game that I know Craig Harris reviewed. Power Pro Chris Shepard. What did I want to highlight here? Oh, he also picked Rocket Robot on Wheels. Has anybody played this game?
I don't remember that being championed. Yeah. Let me see if I reviewed it.
They also say Chris's job title, pre-press and design assistant, doesn't explain much. The plucky Scorpio spends most of his busy day playing games. Why did they astronomy?
I hate it. I hate it. Kill it.
So, you know, a lot of people have nostalgia for and love, you know, 3D platformers. I'm a huge fan, but like there's not actually that many, right? Like there's Mario 64 and Banjo-Kazooie, and then you had like Spyro and Croc on PlayStation. So it's like Rocket is one of those games that existed in like the tier beneath the top tier, along with like, you know, I don't know, like Community.
We gave it a 9.
Yeah.
Rocket Robot on Wheels.
There you go. It sounds like we got it right.
Who reviewed it?
I'm finding out right now. I've scared to look.
Mac Asimacina, all right. Power Pro Jenny picks the Game Boy camera and printer. Says it's amazing how many super cool things you can do with the Game Boy camera. Little movies, funny songs, wacky photos. Grab one, find the player's guide, and create. There's a player's guide for the Game Boy camera.
Weird.
That's cool. We've lost.
Must have. You lost me?
What? You were distracted.
You were distracted.
Oh, I was looking at my phone, so I was really still. I was going to read you a quote from the Rocket Robot on Wheels review, but you don't need to hear it at this point. It's fine. All right. Let's move on.
Power Pro Jason also picks the Game Boy camera. He says, I don't think most people understand even a third of what it can do. Hook it up to your Super Game Boy and use your VCR to record lo-fi, grainy, full motion video. The DJ function is also incredibly detailed.
Wait, I didn't know that. No, I want to record stuff.
I mean, yeah, it probably looks awesome.
Yeah, it looks like a Beastie Boys video.
Yeah.
The thought process I just went through is like, well, I know everything that thing can do. And then they listed two things I didn't know it could do. So I guess I was proven wrong.
Power Bro Scott. It says, a gentleman and a scholar. Scott is Nintendo's foremost authority on Mountain Dew. In his 13 years with Nintendo, no one has seen him in a t-shirt without a video game logo on it. So there are some real veterans working at Nintendo Power.
Okay. What were his t-shirts in 1987?
I know. If this is 2001, right, he's been there for 13 years. So he started at Nintendo in 88.
I want those t-shirts.
Wow.
That was even before Nintendo Power, right? When Nintendo Power was
the year it came out.
Okay, that was the year.
Fall 88.
That's so crazy to think that someone worked at Nintendo Power for that long.
Yeah, that's really cool. That's a lot of counselor's corners.
Online Pro, Andy picks Boogerman.
Nice.
He says, thank you, Boogerman, for reminding us all not to take our jobs too seriously. This game doesn't have the best play control or the most advanced graphics, but it is goofy, fun to play, and true to its name.
Do you guys remember play control? That was a term that existed in this industry.
He picks a Game Boy game called Pro Dart. He picks a darts game for Game Boy. When I first heard about this game, I was extremely unexcited. I reluctantly picked it up to write a review, but after a few turns, I ended up carrying it around with me for a few.
And now it's just something we're forced to do in Final Fantasy.
Yeah, I guess I did play the darts game. Power Pro Alan also picks Bionic Commando Elite Forces, which is the Game Boy Bionic Commando, which is very good. Earthbound, it's funny, it's weird, it's perfect. I bawled when I found out Earthbound 64 was canceled. The greatest game to grace any Nintendo system ever, Earthbound. He also picks Double Dribble, the first cager to have dramatic close-ups of slam dunks. I don't know what the term cager means.
Yeah, we're not exactly sports files. Is that what they call themselves?
That's true.
Sporto files.
Power Pro George picks Maniac Mansion. Which is one of my favorite games of all time. He also picks Quirk on the Game Boy, which, Sam, I think we've talked about recently. He also picks the Street Fighter II port to Game Boy, which is just such an unusual.
That's the way to experience it. Black and white, slow, terrible play control.
Two buttons.
And then Online Pro Dan has spent the last 12 years at Nintendo.
Wow.
Power Pro Sonya. Sonya's reign of terror at Nintendo Power has lasted for more than 10 years. These are like some real, real Nintendo Power veterans that are working here this time.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Dan says, Dan picks Kickle Cubicle for the NES. One of the greatest action puzzle games ever. Plus, the name is just awesome. Say it over and over again.
Yeah, I do frequently. It's a game about kicking cubes, so name don't lie.
He also says about Willow NES, Willow is what Zelda 2 should have been.
Yeah, well, it's a top-down Zelda game, but, you know, it's also Willow, and it's pretty janky.
All right. Those are all the highlights.
That was good.
Yeah. So I mentioned that Nathan had a 20 questions specifically for Sam, but it's like super hard mode that really no one would have a chance of guessing except for Sam. So I have another, a real one that we'll do first. And then if Sam wants to stick around for his, we can do that. So that brings us to Video Game 20 Questions. Our suggestion this week comes from two boyfriends, Will and Jared in Lafayette, Louisiana. And I assume that's a callback to a few episodes ago when we got a suggestion from one husband and one wife. This week it's from two boyfriends.
Cool.
Let the questioning begin.
First-person view?
Does this game use a first-person view?
Yeah.
How is that a different question?
A different question than what?
Than what she asked.
I didn't hear what she asked.
Oh, okay. I thought you were just rephrasing it in a weird Damon way.
No, I didn't hear her.
All right, so not first-person.
This is not a first-person game.
Okay. Could this game have appeared in the, that issue of Nintendo whatever?
No.
Okay.
Does this game, do you pilot vehicles in this game?
I can't say. I don't know. hold on. I know that you do not. I don't know.
So we don't need to ask if it's a Damien game.
Yeah, that's true. That's a freebie.
Is this a multiplayer game?
No.
Is it an exclusive to a platform?
No.
Is this on current gen consoles?
There is a way to play it on a current gen console.
Okay.
I don't like that.
But question. it did not get a release on current gen console.
Oh. But then what's the way to play it?
Oh, so like a backward compatibility thing?
Yeah. Is this a Xbox 360 era game?
Yes.
Okay. Was it on what was GameCube? Gosh, I'm getting so mixed up. Between Wii or Wii U. Was this on Wii?
No.
Okay.
No.
Is it a sci-fi game?
Of a sort, yeah.
Was this game developed in Japan?
Yes.
Is it an RPG?
Yes. That's 10.
Nice.
RPG semi-sci-fi game?
Yeah, like Xenoblade?
Yeah.
It's a part of a series?
Probably. I like cyberpunk stuff.
It is part of a series.
Okay. Is it a license, based on a license?
No.
Okay.
Did Square Enix make it?
Yes.
Well, then.
What was that? Was Lost Odyssey a Square Enix RPG from that gen? I don't really know. I wasn't playing a lot of Japanese RPGs in that era.
Is this part of the Final Fantasy series?
Yes.
Is this, okay, does this game, I don't know, I think it's Final Fantasy 13. I'm trying to figure out how to
narrow it down.
Yeah, does this game star Lightning?
Yes, that's 15.
Shit, does 13 have a sequel?
Yeah, but it's got two sequels. Is this the first game that starred Lightning?
Yes.
Is it Final Fantasy 13?
Yes, Final Fantasy 13.
Wow.
Nice move. Is that the fastest one in a while?
Yeah, that was really efficient.
Yeah, seriously.
It took us 15, but we knew it by 15. The backwards compatibility thing actually helped me because after I finished 7, I was just thinking about, like, I think I want to play Final Fantasy 13. I think I want to give it another shot. And I was figuring out how to do that. Like, you can't play it on a PS4, But it is like, since Xbox backwards compatibility is like so good and strong, like that is a good way to play that game now.
It's even been modernized for Xbox One X.
Yeah, sorry, that's what I meant. And it's on Steam as well, if anyone's interested.
Yeah.
Nice.
That's a good one. Well done, everyone.
For people with hard stops, you're welcome to leave, I guess. Am I going to stick around for this nonsense?
Yeah. Right. Everyone is also welcome to stay if you want, but
I'll bear witness.
Okay.
Okay.
I do have to hop out. Thank you.
All right, Justin.
As always.
Hard at Justin.
Thanks, Justin.
Bye.
Have a good one. Bye.
All right.
Okay. As a hint, remember this is from Nathan. And Nathan says, it's one of the few games I could ever get my redacted to play with me because redacted enjoyed redacted in it, even though it had a redacted.
What?
That's Let cute. The questioning begin.
So it's maybe like my dad liked playing it because it had hockey in it. But...
and feel free to participate, Tina.
Yeah.
Okay. Jeez. I'll Helps lead it in the opposite direction.
Is this from before 1990?
No.
90s kids will remember. Is this on a Nintendo platform?
Yes.
Is it on the Super Nintendo?
No.
Is it on the Nintendo 64?
No.
Oh boy. So it's on either the portable system or the Virtual Boy. But you wouldn't play that with somebody.
I have to imagine you've played the game if it's for you.
Yeah, or it could just be like a collectory game. Is this a I'm just gonna have to keep on asking the consoles. Is this an NES game?
Yes.
Okay. NES 90s game. I can actually get these pretty well usually. It might be Panic Restaurant. See, I played this game.
You already asked if we mentioned it.
Well, I played this game with my chef because he really liked that it had screaming hot dogs on the cover. I Mad Libs it. that was very sarcastic. Let's do, is this based on a license?
No.
Is it a sports game?
No.
Is this a game about killing people?
I guess it is not a game about killing people.
So people was the thing he stressed there.
Mm-hmm. So it could be robots or animals. Is this a game about killing animals or dinosaurs? Yeah. Is this a game about killing animals?
Presumably they're dead after you're done with them.
Oh. So zombie animals or just zombies?
Mm-hmm. Or they're dead after you're done with them maybe means that they're like not knocked off screen or unconscious or something.
I see.
Like you're just.
It's rated.
Whisking them out of existence.
Yeah, it's PG.
Mm-hmm. Is this a top-down game?
Yeah, I think you would say that. That's 10, by the way.
Well, you'd think I would say that.
I think anybody would say that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Does this have puzzles in it?
Yes.
Okay. I'm thinking this is Fire and Ice, Kickle Cubicle, or The Adventures of Lolo, or Scheherazade, or something like that. Do you push blocks around in this?
Yes.
Did I mention the game already?
Yes.
Wow. I don't know where to go with this. Is this a game about ice cubes?
Yes.
Is it called Fire and Ice?
Wait, that's your guess?
No, is it Kickle Cubicle? Yeah, I'm thinking it's Fire and Ice. Do I have to make it official?
Yes, but remember, if you guess wrong, you lose.
Oh, okay.
Right. Don't guess Fire and Ice.
Is this a game about the element?
I think you only have a guess left, right?
No, he's at 14.
Oh, okay.
Is this a game about, you know, the fundamental elements of the planet?
No, that's 15.
Okay. Is this a game about kicking?
Yes.
Well, I mentioned this earlier. How could this be? Is this a game that's part of a series?
No.
I don't know enough about Kickle Cubicle to make this happen. Is this a game that has a really hard to read cover?
Hard to read what?
Cover.
No.
That's Scheherazade has that. All right, is it Kickle Cubicle?
Nice. Yes.
Why didn't I mention this earlier?
What do you mean mention it?
Yeah,
it was in that issue of Nintendo Power.
Yeah, and didn't I say, is the game that this guy... Wasn't that the game that I said, is this game... Did it something I mentioned already, and it was Kickle Cubicle?
No.
He answered, I said you have mentioned the game. Yeah.
No, I just thought I'd asked that earlier in the episode.
Earlier you thought it was Panic Restaurant.
Oh, okay.
And for the previous round, you asked if we'd mentioned it before, which was a no. Or no, you asked if it was in the Nintendo Power Edition.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which was a no, because it wasn't, but this one was.
But we had talked about Kickle Cubicle. That's amazing.
It's a bonus subscription, 20 questions. Yeah. That's what it is.
Would we have gotten that had we not read that issue of the magazine?
I don't know.
That's up to you, Sam.
Nathan says, it's one of the few games I could ever get my dad to play with me because he enjoyed figuring out the solutions to puzzles, even though it had a cutesy art style.
That's really cool. I like that.
I've actually never played that game, but it looks cool. I'm gonna check it out.
Mm-hmm. And you do. It's so weird that it has ice blocks in it.
Yeah.
Pango.
All right. Well, that brings us to the end of another episode. Not as many technical issues this time. But I'm happy about that.
Yeah, and people don't know this, but we go on podcasting until the end of the day for about 3 or 4 more hours now. It's just we don't record it for you guys. It's just
yep.
It goes in the bank. Yeah. I mean, they're really fun. They're really interesting and fun and informative because we're great to hear talk. So you know, there's that. But like you guys would.
Yeah, Game Scoop is like the warm up.
Yeah.
All right, that's all the scoops we have for you this week. Thank you, Sam. Thank you, Tina. Thank you, Justin. Thank you, Borba. Working behind the scenes. Remember, you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@ign.com. My name is Damon. This is IGN Game Scoop, and we're out.
Stranger, I'd like to introduce you to something new, or perhaps something very, very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator Follow Radolph as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods and the human race are not their favored children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, the heresies of Radolph Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.